Larkin along the right side. Sends it across to Nick Letty, moving in. Now to Larkin in the slot. Scores! Dylan Larkin wins it for Detroit.
Loose puck, trying to get control of it. Both teams batting away, and they score! Shinstop, the power play. The Arizona Coyotes add another, and they regain the two-goal lead up 4-2.
Left side circle, Kaprizov. Save made by Prentzos! And this party is over.
Hurdle to center, 3-on-2 developing. Hurdle down the right, cross the line, rink wide. Meyer makes the move, shooting it. He scores! For the first time in Sharks history, a player has scored 5 goals in a game. It's Timo Meyer.
TSN 1200.
And who'd have thought that, folks? Welcome back. 8:15 here on a Tuesday morning.
With J.R. Zimmer and Hammer, Mike Johnson, our TSN Hockey Insider, will join us momentarily. Some highlights from around the National Hockey League from a busy day yesterday, busy day and night, Martin Luther King Day in the United States. 5 afternoon games. You heard some of the highlights, including Timo Meyer's huge day slash night for the Sharks. 5 goals, first NHLer to do that since Mika Zibanejad back in 2020. And, of course, Sens fans remember one of the most recent ones as well, Johan Franzen. I will have some Johan Franzen, please, with a side of butter cake. Had 5 goals back in 2011 that was at Canadian Tire Center, I think, if I remember correctly. Yeah, the last one being one where he whipped around the net and came. Yeah, it was a bad goal.
Underrated crease crasher as well.
Johan Franzen?
Oh, yeah. He was always in the middle. He had a bit of a rivalry cooking with Ottawa, too, didn't he?
I think so. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And had one. He was the guy that Mike Babcock didn't get along with well, right?
Him
and Holmstrom mixed up.
Yeah, so. No.
No, that was
both of them. Holmstrom couldn't skate a lick.
Yeah.
And he took a licking for a long time. You know, Franzen was just a monster of a man.
It is Sens and Sabres tonight at Canadian Tire Center. Empty Canadian Tire Center. 7 o'clock will be the puck drop. 5 o'clock pregame show right here on TSN 1200. Let us get to the phone lines and welcome a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group, the aforementioned TSN Hockey Insider, Mike Johnson. How you doing this morning, Mike?
Good morning, guys. It's funny hearing you tell stories about Johan Franzen because I remember playing against him, and he was very, very talented. But you could not. He would frustrate you to no end. Not necessarily me, but like he'd play in front of the net. You'd say underrated crease crasher, kind of dirty that way. But there was nothing you could do to engage him in like an altercation. You would try. I remember playing on teams that would spend the entire game running around trying to like get him, and he just would like smile and be like, sorry, boys, sorry. Don't stop falling on our goalie and scoring goals and be less sorry. You just could not get him to, like, you know, whatever, scrum it up. He would always just be greasy and then just skate away with a smile.
Yeah, and score 5 goals. So there
and
you go.
Score 5 a lot of goals, yeah.
So if I were to ask Mike Johnson, if you owned an NHL team, let's say here in Ottawa, and you were mandated that you had to play a game with no fans on a Tuesday night in January, and you could pick your visiting team, would the Buffalo Sabres indeed be the team that you would pick to be here?
Are they the lowest drawing team in the league for us? Probably right now they would be. So they might. I would be worried just for proximity. Maybe get a couple hundred people that might be fans that be close enough. But yeah, I mean, that's the way it would go. That's almost how it was last night. Buffalo played a game with all the snow and everything else that there were not many people there. But, yeah, it would probably be the one. It's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out. They've tried to avoid the Canadian teams playing at home without any fans or with limited fans, but they just can't wait anymore. Like, at some point, they have to start playing games, and I guess the point is now. So we'll see how these games feel, how they're played. I guess the good news, they're playing right now between teams that don't really, you know, not playing to make the playoffs. It's not going to be make or break one way or the other, although the Sens are playing pretty well as of late. But, yeah, it probably would be the Buffalo Sabres because, I don't know, like on a post-snow apocalyptic day, Sabres, Sens, where they are right now, what would it draw anyways if there are fans allowed? Would it draw 10,000?
Yeah, well, I think people here are a little excited the way the team is playing. But, yeah, I mean, for a Tuesday in January, it's still hard to get around the city. Yeah,
right.
I would think 10 would have been probably a good crowd tonight, for sure.
Right, so that's going to be about as low as they get during the year. So maybe that is a good selection. But they should be excited. They are playing a little bit better. But I never, you know, listen, all you can do is what you can do, right? Like, you can only play the games and win the ones in front of you. But part of me just feels, like, tempered in my excitement because we've seen this act before, right? Did we not see this last year, the last 30 games? So that's the challenge. It's like, you want to be excited because they're playing well, and you see pieces that work well together, and the future seems bright and everything else, but it seemed bright last year, too, and then this year started the way it did, and it didn't work well.
What have you seen out of Buffalo under Donnie Granato this year? I mean, certainly the lack of goaltenders has been a big story.
That's been a big part of it. I mean, you knew going in, right? Like, they opted to go with Craig Anderson and Aaron Dell, and Aaron Dell actually didn't win the job. It was won by Dustin Tokarski. And so we probably shouldn't be surprised that goaltending has been an issue. They've rolled through 3, 4, 5 different goalies trying to find someone. Their prospect, Jukka-Pekka Luukkonen, looks like he might be the best of the bunch. But, you knew they were going to struggle. They just don't have enough. They don't have enough players. They struggle defending. They play on their own end too much. The offense has been a little bit better, but just without the puck, they just get running around. They make some bad decisions. You can take advantage of them and their mistakes, and they don't have the goaltenders to clean those mistakes up. So they're on their way back down towards the bottom of the league. They will probably be behind everyone except for, Montreal and Arizona when it's all said and done, which is probably where we thought they would be at the beginning of the year.
Last year, of course, they had the number one pick in the draft and took Owen Power, and we saw him play for Canada at the World Hockey Championships and then a couple of games at the World Juniors and the one in which he got a hat trick. In all probability, Mike, I think he probably leaves Michigan after the NCAAs this year. Do you look at and your small sample size and watching him and think that guy's stepping in and he's going to be, at the very least, a top four defenseman on an NHL team right away?
Yes, absolutely. I think he's got a little bit of the Jake Sanderson trajectory, right? So playing the World Championships, playing the World Juniors. He wanted to go back and have a normal college experience. Now, this year has probably been a bit more normal for him. So go to the Olympics, go finish your college season, so end of the season, playoffs, NCAA tournament, sign pro, get a taste of that, and then maybe World Championships, and then you're off and running for the rest of your career. I think his baseline is a top four steady Eddie. You know, big guy, skates well, moves it well. That's kind of the worst he's going to end up. If he ends up better than that, it's because his puck skills get better. And for the brief glimpse at the World Juniors, they look pretty good to me. And in Buffalo, for sure, he will step in. And if they can get, Rasmus Dahlin, who was supposed to be just, not just an okay defenseman, but an incredible defenseman, if they get him trending upwards, they get Power going, some pieces start falling into place for them and maybe they start getting a bit better. But I expect him to be really good. A lot of poise, skates really well, feels like he's a little bit more mature beyond his years. He should slide into that lineup right away and be fine.
It felt like, Dahlin went number one in the year that the Sens took Tkachuk, and Buffalo's been terrible. Not that Ottawa's been much better in that time. But at the time, I remember up until the draft lottery, like Ottawa was all in on, hey, let's win the lottery. Let's get Dahlin. Mm-hmm. In watching the Sabres, has his game, where is the state of his game in your opinion? Do you still think that he can achieve the heights that everybody had projected that he would back at that draft in 2018?
It's so hard to tell, right? Because for a defenseman, they need the infrastructure around them to support them. They need the team to be able to play and move pucks up the ice and score goals and acquire points and all the rest of it. So it's hard to tell. He's been better under Granato. That much is certain, right? Like he's playing with the puck, making better plays. He's more dynamic, but he's better defensively. He's been better under Granato, but he still is not. Like he was thought to be like almost a, not a generational, might be strong, but elite player. And he hasn't been that yet, but I think that's really mostly a function of environment. So, but I don't know if we're going to know though, right? Like, I don't know if this year, I don't know if next year, like when is Buffalo going to be good enough to think, okay, he's got enough around him that he has to lead and be the best player of to really know what he is. I don't think it's going to be this year. I don't think it's going to be next year. So I don't know when we will know.
Yeah, it reminds me of quarterbacks in the NFL, MJ. And if you were to switch out he and Makar, and Makar is a dynamic player, but to your point, I mean, mm-hmm. Makar went into a very good situation, and this fella has gone into a complete gong show where he's in his own zone all the time without any help.
On his what? Third, fourth coach, on his second, third GM.
Well, imagine the negativity as well, right?
Like washing over you, and you're carrying it because you're supposed to be a difference maker. You're feeling like you're the one who's maybe not doing your job, and it'd be really tough. And I think we've seen that from Buffalo. Really good players have struggled. You know, Ryan O'Reilly was wanted out of there. Jack Eichel's wanted out of there. Are those guys losers? No. Are they not good? Of course they're good. It's been the environment just weighing them down. I think, you know, everybody who plays there falls victim to that a little bit through no fault of their own. So yeah. Makar's a good example, like how different it would be. So, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Jury's out, but it does speak to the importance of, like, at some point you gotta turn it around. Like, Rasmus Dahlin will be going into what, his fifth year coming up. At some point, you know, it does start to leave a mark. The scar tissue does add up. We've seen it with the Sharks, with the Oilers, and you don't want to have that. We've seen it with the Sabres. You don't want to have that happen to your young players that you're trying to rebuild with. And I wonder if in Arizona might be the next place that it could happen, because they are stripping, I know they won last night, but they are stripping it so down that you wonder, like, how long will it take to build it back up?
For Ottawa, playing better hockey lately, as you said, we saw this last year, and so maybe a little bit of tempered enthusiasm, but enthusiasm nonetheless for the last about a month of hockey that we've seen here. On Matt Murray, he's come back. He got the two wins in Alberta, gave up four goals against Edmonton, but made a couple of saves in the third period when that game was hanging in the balance. Do you, Mike, I guess regardless of how he plays, as long as he keeps winning and plays decently, do you ride him because he's the guy you're trying to rebuild? He's the guy you made the investment. He's the guy eventually you want to be, if possible, to be the number one goalie going forward.
You play him, but I don't think you ride him into the ground. I think, you know, you're not playing him 9 out of 10 games just because he's winning those games. If he's not playing great, you want to make sure to get him rest. You want to make sure to keep working on his game technically. You're in this for the long haul, right? You're not just trying to make it a two-week thing of let's get a little juice going for him. I think him winning, I thought in Calgary he played pretty well. Maybe in Edmonton not quite as strong, but it's amazing what winning, it goes both ways, right? Like a little bit of good goaltending helps you so much, because when you make mistakes, they don't end up in the back of your net. You feel better about yourself. You keep playing, confidence stays higher. And when you're winning, if you're the goaltender, like, you don't worry about the fact that you gave up for it. You know, everyone feels decent about where things are headed. So I would of course you're going to get him in the games and play him 6-7 out of 10. If the team is doing well, as you try to rehabilitate his game. But I don't think you're riding him just into the ground because you happen to be winning. Slow and steady, and everyone, you know, kind of helping each other along here. But in Ottawa, it's like, when they get good goaltending, now it's been the story for a couple of years. They're fine. Like they're better than just fine. They're good. The goaltending has just been so hit or miss for the last couple seasons.
Yeah, I'd ride him unless there's back-to-backs. And also in the case, just MJ and DJ Smith has this crazy thing of not naming the goaltender. Would this be the one case where you roll back from the trip and say, hey, as of yesterday when you have your presser, man, we're going right back to Matt Murray Tuesday? And I know internally, but just to give a little bit of a shout-out to a little bit versus, well, we're not really sure who we're going to talk to the goalie coach. Wouldn't you be maybe given a little bit of public praise at this point?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, because internally, I imagine they would know, right? Murray would
absolutely
know yesterday,
yeah,
who's
yeah.
playing. But yeah, like a little pump, even for a veteran guy, a Stanley Cup winner, like a little love from somebody publicly still feels good. And I think that's where DJ and any coach, you know, has to recognize who he's talking about, how they're feeling about themselves, and you know, maybe saying, yeah, he played well enough. We want to get him back in there. We believe we've got something going on. He's got something going here, so we're going to keep it rolling, would probably feel good. So, yeah, that wouldn't be a bad idea at all.
We haven't talked to you since Ottawa's big comeback win over Edmonton about Connor McDavid and his post-game comments, in which he, for all the world, looks like he's just out of answers and frustrated, mm-hmm. and he's got to talk. He's the captain, et cetera, et cetera. Is it for him, do you think, is this a new level of exasperation, or has it been there, done that, and he's feeling like he would have last year and the year before that and the year before that? Like, where do you think his head's at?
I imagine he's as, like, it clearly looks like he is. You're right. Like, you watch that presser after the Ottawa game, and he looks, like, at wit's end. And he's always been pretty good at being level-headed. When things are good, he's like, yeah, you know, it's okay. You know, we're just doing our thing. And when things are bad, he's like, yeah, it's okay. We'll figure it out. I imagine when they've lost before, whether it's the playoffs or regular season, he's felt the same degree of frustration. But it appeared as though after the Ottawa game, he couldn't hide that frustration. He couldn't put the mask on and act like everything was okay. And that appears to be new. But I think it's probably because it's been a while, right? Like, it's been several years where he's been awesome and Drysdale's been awesome, and they haven't quite found the team around them that allows them to be competitive and maybe a Stanley Cup contender. And maybe they were fooled a little bit by the hot start of him, the goaltender, the power play, and thought that we're really good when they were not that good. I mean, I think I had them bubble playoff team in the Pacific anyways, and that would be frustrating to him. And I bet he wants better. He wants more. And at this point, he might want something different. Not different, not Edmonton, but just, you know, different players, different coach, different something to give him a chance to be successful with a different result. So it feels as though the situation is more critical, more urgent right now in Edmonton, because with Stuart Skinner just went into COVID protocol. Mike Smith, you know, he just can't stay healthy. Yeah, I don't even know if he's playing well this year. We don't know. He just hasn't played enough. He can't stay healthy, and Koskinen can't do it for long stretches of time. It's hard to have a good team. Doesn't Ottawa know it when you don't know what you're going to get in net? And I think that's where Edmonton is right now, and that's not a good place to be.
If you did an external audit and you have no emotional attachment to MMJ, do you also say that they're not necessarily underachieving, which is a whole different realm of frustration, a coaching change? And you'd look at that. I look at that roster Saturday night. I can't believe how bad it is.
Well, that's exactly right. Like, you know, do they really have an actual accurate representation of how good they are? Yeah. They probably don't. Because, but I like, much like a good goalie makes up for everything. Like, can you imagine, like, when you win a whole bunch of games because those two guys are so, so good and your power play runs at 46% for a month and a half? Like, are you that good, or are you just guys doing something that is unsustainable? But nobody thinks that way when you're in the middle of it, right? It just feels like, oh, we're really good. We're finding ways. We have great players. But you're right. Like, they're out, when Drysdale and McDavid are not on the ice, that's been well repeated. They're outscored 2-1. Like, that's not good enough to win. Like, those guys are great, but, like, no one can do that long term. So that's the challenge. And Ken Holland knows this. He tried to address it last year. Fogle and Ryan, Zach Hyman plays in the top six, so it doesn't really matter. He went out and got CeCe and Keith. We can question all those decisions, and I think it's fair to do that. He knows. He knew they weren't good enough depth wise. He knew they didn't have enough good players. He tried to change it. I just don't know if he made, you know, good calls in making all those roster moves.
If it's bad in Edmonton, it's even worse in Montreal, which sunk even lower yesterday in a loss to Arizona, and that's six in a row, one win in the last 14. I know you did a bit of a deep dive yesterday on the Habs and mm-hmm. who they can get rid of and et cetera, and maybe for our listeners who haven't seen it, how many of the players on the roster right now legitimately, do you think, given what's left in many cases on their contracts, can Montreal trade?
Well, we'll do the obvious one. Ben Chiarot, Brett Kulak. I think they will both get traded as unrestricted free agents. So that's simple. The harder ones are the ones you're talking about. They have a whole bunch of guys with term that are more difficult to trade. Now, I think Jeff Gorton should take a good hard look at trading just about anyone. Because I saw you put it out. I saw it yesterday as well. They have the highest payroll in the league.
Oh,
like they it's one thing to be Arizona and try to be bad and be bad. It's another thing to have the most money allocated in the entire league and unquestionably be the worst team right now. So that's where you got to look at. Like, I don't. The problem is, like, could you trade Mike Hoffman right now? Probably not. The guys you might be able to trade, Josh Anderson, maybe. Maybe Jonathan Drouin, because he doesn't have that much time left on his deal. Arturi Lehkonen, you certainly probably could. I'm running out of guys. Jake Allen, maybe. Like, that's not enough. Like, you've got to strip this down a little bit more. And the problem is, like, Brendan Gallagher, you love him. Love him. You know, he makes a lot of money. His contract is just starting. That's a problem, right? Josh Anderson, Hoffman, Dvorak, Drouin, on and on they go. And we're not even talking about, you know, Carey Price and the other guys who are hurt. You probably could trade Tyler Toffoli if you wanted to. That would be a guy you probably could trade to. He doesn't make that much money. But that's the problem, right? Like, so you want to trade four of those guys if you're going to, you know, rebuild, and you might only be able to move one or two of them. And so they're going to be stuck for a while as these contracts work their way down and expire with a similar-looking team. And that team right now is just not very good.
Would the return of Sherratt and Kulak be enough that the rebuild would be over?
I'm picking up on your sarcasm, and
again, I know we all have fun, and I you know, again, it's Twitter can be fun. Like in Brendan Gallagher, we saw this coming when he got the contract. He was moping around a little bit. And I love the guy there. Hey, and I love that he got paid. But he was a no-show in the playoffs last year. He's a little guy that's a power forward. Nobody is taking on the first of a six-year, $6 million third-line small winger, are they?
Not unless you're eating money or taking a bad contract back, yeah. I mean, I think everyone was concerned about that because his body was starting to, you know, show the wear and tear of his good career. He's had an excellent career, and he's better than a third-line player. He has been for his career. He's been a top six guy for sure. It just, you know, his body is breaking down on him too frequently. So no one is taking him. You know, and I think Mark Bergevin felt compelled to give him that contract out of loyalty and out of the fact that they were having this, you know, potentially good run. And good for Galley, man. He's laid his body on the line. I'm happy when guys get paid, but you're right. Yeah. It's that contract. It's tough when guys, you know, Josh Anderson's another guy. Like, the guys are in their first year of, like, long-term deals. And they already are like, no, can't move that deal. Like, what does that say about the deal? Says it's no good. Yeah. When they're in year one and you're like, no, you can't trade that contract. Untradeable. That makes you wonder, like, the contracts obviously are not, they're not outperforming them. That's for sure.
Last one on Montreal, and then we'll let you go. Cole Caulfield sitting on one goal in 29 games on the last place team in the NHL. Should he be in the NHL right now for the best for his long-term development?
Well, I mean, he's basically playing with Laval anyways. I'm not trying to be funny, but like, he's got half Laval's roster on the Canadiens. So I don't know what the answer is with him, because he's so far removed from what he was when he showed up last year. Like, the confidence, that kind of swagger, that kind of dynamic element of his game, it's just not there. But I don't know, like, how gutted Laval is, if it's going to be much better to turn to the minors. You don't want to be in the minors and struggling. He's going to be somewhere struggling, at least make it the NHL, and he is certainly struggling.
Doesn't history tell us, though, for a goal scorer, you go through a year like this that you don't score? Man, you roll into next year and start struggling, MJ. You get into some real trouble. And not that he's Curtis Lazar, but I'd have him in the American League, absolutely. And he should be, no matter who's around him at that level, be good enough to score goals.
You'd think so. You'd think so. And I think that's where Jeff Gordon and the development team's got to take a good, hard look. Because this year doesn't matter. Like, whether Carey Price never plays again and he's back to square one on his rehab, Joel Edmondson is back to square one on his rehab. Like, their guys, they'll be having guys, like, disappearing from the roster for the rest of the year. And maybe that might be the best thing for Cole Caulfield's long-term success, because that's all that really matters at this point, is his long-term.
All right, good stuff. As always, look forward to chatting with you again on Thursday.
All right, boys. Have a good day. Stay out of the snow. Be safe.
All right, will do.
This is TSN 1200.
Well, it wasn't red flag, it was white flag in Arizona last night. We'll get to that in just a second. Welcome back, everybody. 8:48. J.R. Simmer and Hammer with you, and congratulations to Perry Nui, lucky texter number 50 at 1200. Perry, you've scored yourself a $100 Gabriel Pizza gift certificate as part of the Big Game Contest. Big Game is coming up, as we all know, the game of games, as we've dubbed it. Mm-hmm. on February the 13th from SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles between the winner of the American Football Division Conference and the National Football Conference. Those two combatants will combine for the big game, the game of games, coming up next month in Los Angeles.
I'm going to ask you, JR, as we sit here on January 18th, is it possible we can have a bad matchup in this year's Super Bowl? I say no.
A bad matchup in terms of what? It won't be a competitive
game? No, no, no. Just any because to me, the two teams that I'm least excited about are Cincinnati and
Tennessee,
but one of them is going to be knocked out.
Yep.
I look at anything that's left at this point, and I say to myself, wow, I'd be excited to tune in of any combination, and I'll even throw in those two. I mean, to me, the eight that are left right now, I don't see a bad combo.
Cincinnati, I think if they were to make it, they are the most low-profile team of all of them.
Yeah.
But all that to say, Joe Burrow may be the next great young quarterback in the NFL. Mm-hmm. So there's that. And then Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow, you've got arguably the greatest young passing combination in the league. So that would be, if they got to a Super Bowl, a coming out party for them and exciting. Yeah. Tennessee, I think there's a little bit. I think there's a great unknown, but Derrick Henry is kind of worth the price, you know, just in terms of a battering ram running back. Yeah. You know, he's interesting. I agree with you that those are the two low profile, lowest profile teams.
Yeah.
Would I would say like a Tennessee, Tennessee.
Well, anything on the other side right now between Rams, Bucks, even I'll say Niners and Green Bay, JR, there's not going to be a bad result in that. The Niners would be at the bottom, but
no,
still,
I don't think so. They got a huge fan.
No. I meant in general interest of where kind of the star profile is. That you know, but whatever. I think, and also would you agree? One thing that goes with the Bengals, although some of the announcers were using an A on the weekend, which is fine. Strong helmet game, right? Like best helmet in the league,
Cincinnati.
Yeah,
the Tiger stripes.
Yeah. Chargers, the Bengals got to be right there, right? Work with me. No.
Well, you know, everybody
to themselves. That's a strong helmet game. I like your Eagles helmets, but I'm just saying that's Seahawks might be number one, but I think the Bengals. Oh man, I think those are beautiful helmets.
I'd have to think about it. I don't mind a good Saints fleur-de-lis.
Yeah,
the gold and black.
Not bad.
A beauty. Yeah. I got to say, and I strongly dislike the team.
Mm-hmm.
The old Blue Stars. I mean, that is a solid. Yeah, I like solid and simple.
Yeah.
You know, I don't mind that.
Yeah. Might have to do a power ranking. I and again, might, as you said, kind of what you grew up with. The Niners combo, I think, is underrated, man.
Red and the gold?
Oh, the whole thing there. Their helmets are superb as well. Where, you know, there are some teams, including Cleveland, although very simple. The Washington football team, which we should find out the 2nd of February 2022. Mm. But, yeah, there's some boring ones out there. Anyways, my point, I'm excited about the way this is going to unravel. This will be a great weekend, and whatever the final four ends up being, and certainly two, I would assume the networks do not really want a Cincinnati-Buffalo, but Buffalo still holds enough back to the Jim Kelly days, and the Bengals, as you said, Joe Burrow is a superstar, and I know it's Cincinnati, but he was a superstar because he won a national championship coming out of LSU. Yep.
He's a known quantity.
Exactly. Yeah, so, you know, it's not like in the NFL, you don't necessarily, well, O.J. Simpson would have, we would have learned that way back in the day as well, right? It didn't matter where you went.
Mm-hmm.
He was already a star before he entered the league.
Yeah, there's. I'll say of the final eight, and obviously my favorite team is not in it, there wouldn't be a team, and it includes, I would even say Tennessee. I enjoy watching Tennessee because they're just a solid football team.
I agree.
Like, well-coached, you know, can run it, can pass a little bit, play strong defense. Like, they're fundamentally strong. As just a fan of the game, of football, I enjoy watching them play because they're a solid, fundamentally well-coached team. They don't have necessarily kind of the flash of some other teams, but they play it the right way. But you know, I got to say, I know you're down on Aaron Rodgers, but Rodgers to Devontae Adams, to have that playing in your Super Bowl, I mean, that's an unbelievable combination right there. There's not a team that I wouldn't be interested in not watching.
And as far as down on Rodgers, I just don't like him. But my God, he's the MVP. And now this is also, to me, what would be fun is that the further it goes, even more so, he's got to bring home a Super Bowl. Like, I mean, this is, they're right there.
It's time.
Show us you're the guy. Show us you can do that. And you got a real nice team around you.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we know the LA Rams joined the party last night by beating the Arizona Cardinals 34-11 in the final game of Wild Card Weekend. The first ever postseason victory for Matthew Stafford, believe it or not, in 14 seasons. Of course, he played in Detroit. There's a reason he never won a playoff game. So a big win for him and for the Cardinals. The end to, well, what could have been. They were the last team in the NFL to lose a game this year. Remember, they started 7-0, and everybody was kind of going, maybe we got to give some love to the Cardinals. Maybe there's something there. And then they started to kind of go into a speed wobble by the end of this regular season. They won a big game in Dallas, but other than that, they lost four of their last five games. They looked like they were seriously in trouble, and then last night got completely snowed under by the LA Rams. Here's J.J. Watt, who made it back to play in last night's game on this Cardinal season.
It was a massive failure. I mean, from what we were capable of doing and from what we showed we can do to today, there's no other way to describe it than as a failure.
All right. Massive failure, says J.J. Watt in summing up the Arizona Cardinals.
And he certainly talks and looks a good game at the line of scrimmage, and he kind of would sum up where he's at. And I give him full marks for coming back to you, but he's a shell of what he was. And, you look at a game like that. What was very strange as well, were they 8-1 on the road and 3-5 at home this year?
They were 8-1 on the road, so however the math works, yeah.
I mean, that was a real peculiar year. And as you said, a lot of things pointed to. Now, I must say, as our football, I guess he's still an analyst, Duke talking. He was chatting up this whole Arizona thing. We might have to draw on the tape hammer because...
Are you dropping him from expert status as well?
Well, I just say...
I did too.
He's down to analyst. I don't know if we just say, if we introduce him Friday, is football fan Duke. But I texted
him last night and I said, and he texted me back and he said, what was I thinking?
He had a bunch of information cooking on. I think
it was more he was down on the Rams than
I know.
Well, how could you be high on either one of these teams the way their season went? There were so many ups and downs for the Rams and the Cardinals. Yeah. And the Cardinals had proven on the road to be quite dominant this season.
As we enter kind of year three working together, JR, I think you're starting to realize the less work you put into these things, the better results.
100%. Why do I even look and study and try to think of trends and everything? I'll be the first to admit. And it's the reason I don't gamble. Because I really like to look into things and try to figure it out, and I couldn't be more wrong.
Yeah.
Like you would, any listener out there that goes against things that I pick is probably sitting home in retirement right now. Like you could build a nice little nest egg going against what I pick.
I also know for myself that the fact I never put any money on anything and I do okay, the minute I started shifting and I'd lose everything. And then the other problem, and I'll say this is almost like COVID, man, I you go through this, JR, I'm so confused by the time a game starts as to who's going to win, and every announcer picks it to be 27-24, one team or the other.
Yep.
Like, it's not like everybody else isn't there. There's so much information now on anything you're doing in life that it's impossible not to second guess yourself or go down the wrong path, right?
Yeah, for sure. I will say one of the fun things that I think, and again, you want to keep the gambling under control, but one of the fun things that I think a lot of people have not started, this isn't a recent thing, but the parlays, like my nephew sent me and kind of was a sort of for the fantasy football league that we're in, kind of shared, and he had like an 11 parlay thing with games and individual like rushing yards and all this, and he was like, it does, football in particular, it sucks you in. That aspect of you'll watch a game, like I'm sure there were people that game was over last night early in the third quarter at 28-0. And I'm sure that people watched it right to the end to see whether, Matthew Stafford had three touchdown passes or, Cam Akers had more or less than whatever the line was, 68 yards rushing. Like it just and like Eddie at security downstairs. Every day I walk past his desk. Look at this parlay I got going on here. 17 things, women's college basketball. It's just like and it is as long as you can kind of, you know, and for a lot of people, they put $2 on it and you can maybe win 100 or whatever. They're pretty reasonable. But that's what it is, man. Yeah. The parlay action.
Yeah, and for me, keeping it as simple, if I was ever to do it, JR, I'd always just go over under. Like, I don't know how many people bet
on
that.
That's what I'm the worst
at. Well, that would be the simple one for me because even, well, the spread, I guess, if you got really into it. Also, in watching with the boys on the weekend, because we end up doing some stuff at home, and the odds that Duke sent us, I was explaining kind of over under along with the spread and everything else. And then we're watching the games, and they're like, how do they get this so right? I said, well, that's why they're the casino. That's why they make the odds. Like,
that's why the buildings, you know, are so big in Las Vegas.
There were a couple of the games, I think the over under was 49.5, and it really was trending right to be 49. Like, well, again, that's why they have massive hotels and lots of cash.
Absolutely. All right, so the final eight is set. The divisional round will kick off Saturday with a pair of games, Cincinnati-Tennessee, Green Bay-San Fran. Sunday games, Rams at Tampa. And then the Bills and the Chiefs. Should be awesome. Okay, 8:59. Tell you what, let's take a break and reset. Top of the hour news, latest news. I'll run down the scoreboard for you, all the details on the Rams win. We'll go through the NHL stuff. When we come back, we'll set you up for a Sens game night. It's the first home game in more than a month. Get you the latest on the lineup. We've got an interesting, I think, web poll question for you today as well, revolving around the young Sens defenseman. So we'll go through that and debate that and much more as hour four gets underway. Right here on Sports Radio, TSN 1200.